Welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast, covering a range of legal topics, including updates from our four practice groups: private client, real estate, business services, and dispute resolution.
Welcome to episode 10 of our podcast. Today's topic is GMP equalisation and the implications for scheme trustees. My name is Alison Hills, and I'm joined by Justin McGilloway. We are both partners in the employee benefits and pensions teams here at Wedlake Bell. In the last few months, a six-letter word has appeared frequently in the press. You'd be forgiven for assuming I'm talking about Brexit. I'm not, though. I'm referring to Lloyds. Justin will shortly summarise what the Lloyds case entailed, but first I'd just like to touch on the history that has led up to this landmark judgment. Historically, it was common for men and women to have different retirement ages from occupational pension schemes, with women often being allowed to commence receipt of their pension benefits 5 years earlier than their male colleagues. On the 17th of May 1990, the Court of Justice of the European Union ruled that occupational pensions were deferred pay, and as such, schemes had to treat men and women equally. This is commonly referred to as the Barber Judgment, as the case was successfully brought by Mr. Barber. The judgment, which applies to rights built up from the 17th of May 1990, imported an equal treatment rule into occupational pension schemes rules, meaning that where a scheme rule would result in a member of one sex being treated less favourably than one of the opposite sex, it must be read as though it does not do so. Over the years, schemes have taken a number of different approaches, some of which have been challenged in the courts and have resulted in a suite of cases which have shaped the law in relation to pensions equalisation. Whilst it was a commonly held belief that the Barber judgment should apply equally to a member's entire pension, i.e. including the member's guaranteed minimum pension where a scheme was contracted out, none of the cases focused on guaranteed minimum pensions, or GMP, equalisation. And as such, the equalisation of GMPs has more or less been brushed under the carpet. It's probably worth mentioning now that it isn't actually possible to equalise a GMP. This is because the Pensions Act 1993 actually requires GMPs to be calculated on an unequal basis. However, to give effect to the Barber judgment, it's possible to alter a member's non-GMP benefits to counteract the inherent inequality in the GMP calculation. The equalisation of GMPs first came to the fore in 2010, when the then Pensions Minister, Angela Eagle, published a brief ministerial statement on the 28th of January 2010, suggesting schemes should be equalising GMPs. Little detail was given, and it was in 2012, after the government received comments and questions following the 2010 statement, that the DWP issued its first consultation on the possible methodology for equalising benefits in respect of GMPs. Draft regulations were produced, but these were withdrawn by the government amidst fears that they would be overly complicated to implement. A further consultation was launched in 2016, which contained a methodology which was more widely accepted. However, the regulations were not finalised. That was probably in part due to the announcement that there was potentially going to be a landmark court case which would cover this topic. I'll now hand over to Justin, who's going to talk us through this most recent development in the world of GMP equalisation.
Thanks, Alison. And as Alison's just mentioned, the question of whether, and if so, how schemes need to equalise for GMPs has been baffling the industry for the best part of a decade now. It's obviously created significant uncertainty for advisors, but more importantly, trustees and employers in terms of how they tackle this issue. However, as Alison has alluded to, in October last year, the High Court handed down its judgment in a very important case in this area. It's known as the Lloyds case, but to give it its correct title, it's Lloyds Banking Group Pension Trustees Limited and Lloyds Bank PLC and others. Now, this case, which is by no means definitive on what has to happen next, does give us a clear, concise steer as to what we should be looking at as far as the industry is concerned. It provides some of the answers, and in a nutshell, the court has decided the following. Trustees are now under a duty to equalise for GMPs. So at least there's now some direction and an ability for advisors to start grappling with this and to advise their clients, trustees and employers alike. There are two methods for equalising GMPs. Now in the Lloyds case, four imaginatively coined methods, A, B, C and D, were discussed. But two of these methods have sort of got the court's blessing and have been deemed lawful. Parties argued for various other methods, but these either went further than the minimum required to achieve equality, at a higher cost, I may say, or failed to achieve equality altogether. The third point that the court came back with were trustees are obliged to make back payments to members, potentially going back as far as 17th of May 1990, the date of the Barber judgment that Alison mentioned. Although whether you have to go back will depend very much upon the rules of your scheme and the operation of what we call limitation periods in the legal world. And finally, on the point of going back all this way, back payments will attract an interest. However, the guidance that the court has set is it should be 1% above base rate. So the methods that the court approved as far as equalising GMPs are concerned, as I mentioned, they were methods A, B, C and D. Method C appears to be the method that the court was most in favour of as far as the Lloyd's facts were concerned. Basically, and please get a cold towel as I explain this, the court confirmed that the minimum required to achieve equality would be to carry out a year-by-year calculation of the pension the member would receive under existing provisions and the pension they would receive had they been of the opposite sex. The scheme must start by paying the greater of the two calculations, and if the comparison switches from favouring one sex to the other, the scheme must start to pay the less generous calculation until the accumulated gains prior to the switch are equal to the accumulated losses after the switch. Now, it is not straightforward, it is not simple, but at least we do have some guidance as to what this methodology should look and feel like. Now, the other method that the court were in favour of, depending on the facts of your specific scheme, was that the trustees and the employer could agree to convert GMPs to non-GMP benefits using the GMP conversion legislation, which is touched upon in the consultation exercise that Alison talked about in 2016. Now, this would involve identifying whether the actuarial value of the member's future unequalised benefits is less than the actuarial value of the future unequalised benefits that would apply to a member of the opposite sex, and putting benefits of equal actuarial value to the larger of the compared values into payment. This was referred to as method D. Now, the cost of these two methods is broadly the same. However, method C, or the default method for the purpose of this podcast, will require ongoing year-by-year comparison, which is not required by the GMP conversion. So, in theory, the GMP conversion method should therefore be less complicated and potentially less costly to administer on an ongoing basis. In addition, GMP conversion has the advantage of removing GMP liabilities and all the additional complexity they give rise to once and for all. It draws a line under it. So many schemes may prefer the GMP conversion. But again, before trustees jump in and think all is well in the world, you'd be well advised to take professional advice from either your actuary or your lawyer. Now, since the judgment in October last year, Alison and I have had various trustee meetings, and naturally, we've been asked lots of questions. So in an attempt to sort of raise those frequently asked questions, we will now go through some of these and attempt to give you our answer or our advice. Now, as with all things GMP related, especially this equalisation problem that's been bugging us for the last decade or so, my starting point is there is no need to panic. So questions that we've received over the course of the last 3 or 4 months.
Okay, yeah. So we've had a number of questions in from a variety of clients across our team. The first one, Justin, that quite a few people have asked me about is whether the High Court decision on the 26th of October is final or whether there's going to be an appeal.
Okay, well, we can be quite definitive on this. Mm-hmm. The decision is now final as the time for an appeal has expired. However, some issues were deliberately not dealt with by the court and will be considered at a subsequent court hearing. And in fact, when we come to round up in our concluding remarks, we'll perhaps talk about some of the areas to watch out for where there is still a degree of uncertainty.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be a good time to touch upon that now. I've heard that a number of the issues which they're hoping to be cleared up in that second hearing are relating to transfers of benefits out to other schemes which include GMP rights, because there's a lack of clarity as to how they are to be dealt with.
Well, my advice to trustees on this particular topic is that trustees really need to decide how they are going to deal with transfer requests which have not yet been implemented. Although the court, as you say, didn't make any decision in relation to transfers out, trustees cannot simply refuse to pay transfer values while they wait to see if there's going to be a further hearing on this issue. Our recommendation is therefore to proceed with a transfer on the existing unequalised basis, or wait until you've taken formal advice as a body of trustees as to how you will actually implement GMP equalisation. So therefore, wait, take the advice, and then communicate with the members before proceeding with the transfer. Now, where you've got a guarantee quote that has already been issued, the trustees may wish to confirm to members that if they decide to wait, the transfer value will not be less than the amount originally quoted to them. If members decide to proceed on an unequalised basis, trustees may need to pay a top-up later once GMP equalisation has been implemented on a scheme-wide basis. And that could either take the form of an additional transfer to the receiving scheme or perhaps a cash payment. However, schemes should be careful not to say that members a top-up will be paid later.
I suppose another point to consider there is also the discharge wording. That will presumably need to be updated in light of this issue.
Correct. Okay, one common question that's been asked so far by trustees and employers alike is that do the trustees have a free hand to decide on the method of equalisation?
Well, this is a really interesting one, and one that was definitely touched upon in the October judgment. No, essentially, is the answer there. The trustees don't have a free hand. They need to ensure that there is minimum interference with members' rights, following the legal principle of minimum interference, which was clearly demonstrated in the Foster Wheeler judgment. The principle isn't something that was dreamt up, but it's grounded in a number of court decisions.
And I touched upon this, Alison, but again, payment of arrears for the past, just so we're clear on this. Can the claimant claim all such arrears?
Well, again, yeah, this is something that was one of the particularly interesting elements of the Lloyds judgment in October. And actually one which I think we both thought, Justin, that could potentially be appealed. However, it's been confirmed that no appeal has been lodged. But the possible timescale for claiming arrears is a complex area. The Lloyds provisions, or the Lloyds judgment, does provide for a limitation in recovery for 6 years, but that was due to specific provisions within the scheme rules which adopted forfeiture provisions. So this is an area where legal advice is going to be absolutely critical for schemes, so they can establish whether they have an obligation to and or a discretion or an opportunity to limit the number of years for which back payments are payable.
And the one quite close to my heart, because I was actually advising on it today, is what about the tax treatment of GMP equalisation top-up payments? Now, once you've decided how to equalise and you've actually come to a decision on how much is actually required. Now, these payments, I believe HMRC are actually being pressed to give their views, but at present they are silent. There are potentially problems where a lump sum payment needs to exhaust the entirety of a member's benefits to qualify as an authorised payment under the Finance Act 2004. Along such lines is where you're paying out serious ill health lump sums and trivial commutation lump sums. So again, this is really a key area that we need guidance from the HMRC on in order to actually execute and implement the equalisation process.
Absolutely, and you can really see the need for schemes to have clarity, especially on serious ill health lump sums, where a member inherently is only going to have a limited life expectancy of 12 months or less. Hopefully the HMRC will be in a position to give us guidance on these points in the coming months.
Now, on the point of actual general member communication and what trustees should be doing, you know, should they be staying silent or actually proactively communicating with members? We've had a mixed reaction from clients, but quite a few of them are actually communicating with members who have either requested a transfer out, or indeed some trustee boards have taken a decision to issue a scheme-wide communication to members about the decision, particularly because this has received so much national press coverage. So depending on the membership of your scheme, it may be appropriate to cover this in the next issue of a trustee newsletter or a summary funding statement, just to put members' minds at ease that it actually is being dealt with. So where do we go from here? Well, as I said earlier in the podcast, the important thing is for trustee boards not to panic. What we are suggesting trustees do is take advice, take stock of how their scheme operates, Although some elements of GMP equalisation are clearer following the Lloyd judgment, there is still a great deal of uncertainty. The tax treatment on top-up payments, for instance, or what one does where there's a transfer out in progress. So there are outstanding matters to consider before trustees proceed with the actual exercise of equalising GMPs itself. As well as taking legal advice, it's probably also a good idea to complete that GMP reconciliation or rectification exercise that many trustee boards have started. Get the data clean so that when it comes to the actual equalisation process, there are no issues on that front. One may also wish to wait for the GMP conversion legislation and guidance to be finalised before deciding on which method of GMP equalisation to actually use following the Lloyd's decision. Hopefully the conversion legislation and guidance will be finalised later this year, and at that point we will have greater clarity on what trustee boards should be doing next.
Thank you very much, Justin. If any of our listeners have any questions or they'd like to get in touch, our contact details are available on the website. Please do look out for further articles and podcasts available from our team. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
You just listened to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast. If you liked our episode and want to know more, then check out our website, www.wedlakebell.com. Wedlake Bell. Building relationships is at the heart of everything we do.